Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we'll be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comic sales for September 2016 as sold through Diamond to retailers in North America. This is sell-in information, not sell-through information. This is what is invoiced to the stores. What are the other usual caveats? That's most of them. like if anyone hasn't kind of figured some of this out by now, they've got like about 10 years worth of back episodes they can go listen to. Sometimes I go into a lot more detail, but the bottom line is, you know, are comics selling outside of this sales channel? Absolutely. But the sales channel covers most of it. And again, this is what goes into stores. So while that's not everything, you know, there's not a reader for every one of these copies, it is reflective of the reader trends. Because otherwise we would be having stores going out of business left, right, and center. And we have a few that do go out of business over time. There was actually one here in town that just had a bankruptcy sale not long ago, I think since the last time we recorded. But that means they were ordering stuff that more than they could sell, and that's just bad business. But also, I think an easy situation for a comic book retailer to get in. I don't think retail is easy in any market, but I think with the collectability aspect of comics and the almost invisibility of information on detailed information as to the contents when you're ordering for retailers, it's just a tough market.
It's a niche market,
mm-hmm.
And I've got to believe it's getting nichier.
That was the word I was going to use, actually, yeah.
It's
funny because I think the properties have opened up to a wider and wider audience through the movies, the television shows, etc. But I think comic books are going to a decreasing-sized audience. And I was talking to somebody today, and he was thinking, oh, wouldn't it be great if you know, because he's got the Marvel Digital Comics Unlimited, wouldn't it be great if DC had the same? And I'm like, on the one hand, yes. On the other hand, I think it would kill the comic book market. And we've had this discussion before, we'll have it again. And his comeback was, well, yeah, but that's not where they're making their money. And I don't think DC Entertainment or Marvel Entertainment would cease to exist should the print comic market, for whatever reason, vanish. But obviously, the print comic market, by definition, would have vanished in that case.
Well,
and this is a funny thing to be talking about after 3 months in a row, the last three times we've talked, record-breaking sales.
Yeah, and DC leading the way. Here's what's interesting. And I know Drew in particular hates it when I try to mix professional wrestling with comics. but the WWE, the largest professional wrestling organization, and they are a public company, just had their third quarter earnings reports and teleconference and all that stuff for their shareholders. And one of the things they talked about was the success of essentially their streaming network, which has replaced their monthly pay-per-view piece of their business, which used to be a substantial part of their business. Mm-hmm. And essentially, rather than having a percentage of the audience spend $50 a month, they now have about 1.48 million people pay $10 a month to get that same product plus others in kind of that streaming unlimited type model. And their earnings are up. Technically, they're down over Q2, but year over year, they're doing fine. And in that particular business, Q2 is their best anyways. But my point is, and we've talked about this on this podcast before, Marvel, there is a point where if you can get enough people to pay $7 a month or 10 or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
you can replace all of the print sales with that revenue.
Absolutely. I think there is subscription level, size, subscription base level or whatever, a number of subscribers, that's what I mean, to which that is certainly true, and they would no longer be reliant on the print sales. But given Marvel made just under $10 million retail dollars in September. Now, granted, they're only getting, we'll say, you know, 40% of that, because they're giving roughly 60% in discount between what Diamond gets, what the retailers get, etc.
So and they made $4 million.
Yeah.
So at $10 a month, they need 400,000 subscribers.
Mm-hmm. Given they're only, given you can get it for half that, though, they'd need twice that. But we'll say, you know.
Okay, so is it $5 a month?
I was able to actually signed up for $5 a month.
Okay. And again, but okay, so.
That's a specific number. Whether it's 7 million, 8 million, whatever.
There is a number.
Is a number. And yeah. It's not a crazy number. It is way higher than, it's roughly, I'm going to say, equal to the total number of units on average that comics in the top 300 sell. All comics in the top 300.
Yes.
And that's individual units. So if every one of those comics went to a different person and that person said, hey, I'm going to go subscribe to Marvel, they'd be set.
Yeah, but that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is someone like your coworker. How much did he spend monthly on Marvel Comics before Unlimited?
Given he was saying he'd gotten out for a while, probably none.
Yeah, well, that's why, you know, that's really how that subscription model works, is it? Yes, you lose money on the diehards.
Yeah, they lose a ton of money on me, but they've made money on him.
Exactly. And yeah. You just need more of him than you do of you.
And there are more of people in his category than people in my category.
Exactly.
I mean, there's a very finite number of people in the I'm getting just about everything from Marvel and DC kind of a category, because you can cap that at whatever the highest selling item is from Marvel or DC in any given month. So there's literally maybe 130 to 150 absolute tops people in that category. And there are literally millions and millions of people that, hey, you know, I can spend a couple of bucks a month to get a subscription model and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, the economies of scale or whatever, it's just, it works in their favor.
Yeah. So, like I said, I there is a point where the subscription model works. Again, we have no idea what that level is or what those current subscriber base is either.
Yeah.
And I know Marvel does a ton of those promotions to bring people in. That's how I got there. It's how you now are there.
Mm-hmm.
It would be interesting to see what the cost of a new subscriber is to them. You know, how much they have to spend in advertising, promotion, etc. for each subscriber they get. And then, you know, how long does a person on average keep a subscription, yada, yada, yada.
I'd love to see those numbers. They'd be very interesting.
Yeah.
And I'd also be very curious what the similar cost of acquisition is for a print customer. If there's even a way to pay somebody, you know, how would you go? I mean, it's not like there's an outreach program for, hey, go find the local spinner rack comic store or whatever to go pick up a print comic.
Well, and that's the other thing. And I mean, we talk about it on the forum and at times. I often wonder, when we're looking at these numbers, and you always, you know, there's roughly 2,000 stores maybe out there. I wonder what percentage of these numbers go through a very small percentage of them.
One of the suggestions Brian Hibbs had, maybe even 20 years ago, I mean, it was in one of his earlier Tilting at Windmill columns, was if they had additional columns in the information Diamond released, one of which was how many stores ordered any copies of this? One or 1,000, whatever, they count as one. You know what I mean?
Okay, that I find much less useful.
Well, if you knew, I mean, that would tell us right off the bat. If all the DC ones are in the 2,000-ish area, and all of them from a smaller publisher, you know, Aftershock, Black Mask, whatever, are in the, like, 100 category.
Yeah. What I would find much more interesting is what percentage maybe the top five stores represented. Because saying you have 2,000 stores is one thing. If three stores represent 90%, even though you've got 2,000 stores that ordered that item, because, and again, I came back to comics through podcasting and through the forums. One of the other forums I'm on, I just saw, hey, who doesn't order through DCBS kind of question. And the answer isn't not very many.
Yeah.
It's either, hey, I'm in Canada, or, hey, I only buy two or three books a month anymore, are the only people that said no, essentially, to that question. So, I mean, and I realize there are others, but I wonder how many of the real big mail order companies, I mean, do they make up 10% of this list or 80% of this list?
I would love to know that, because I think at your, and I'm going to use the term typical comic book store, whatever that may mean, but by which I mean a local store that's not doing mail order, that's just, again, your run-of-the-mill kind of a average store. You're going to have a couple of customers in there that would be kind of like me, who get a ton of stuff.
Yep.
That are an atypical percentage of the sales. And if you take that up one level, it stands to reason. You're going to have places like Midtown, like DCBS, like, I'm not sure who else would necessarily fall into that category, but a couple of retailers that do an atypical percentage of the sales.
Exactly. And again, if it's two or three that make up, 25%, that's one thing. If it's two or three that make up 80%, it's a whole different thing.
It's one of those things, though, that to a certain very real degree, potentially one of the most influential people in comics, the print comic market, could be Cameron over at DCBS.
Yeah, or the guys at Midtown, or what's his name up in Denver?
Chuck Rosansky.
Yeah, I mean, yes, it is entirely possible there's three or four guys that represent, three or four owners or businesses that represent a huge portion of these numbers. On the other hand, we could be way off, and maybe combined they represent 10%.
True, I don't think, again, who knows? I don't think that's the case, but who knows? The one thing I would say separates Cameron with DCBS is he is very, I think, forward-thinking and aggressive on how he does his bundles and discounts beyond just the, hey, you get X amount off, which is usually about 40% for the front half, 30% for the back half of stuff. Mm-hmm. But he aggressively discounts first issues, jumping on points, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's basically sort of stacking the deck of, realizing if people get on the first issue, they're liable to stick with it for a bit. He'll do a bundle thinking, for whatever reason he does, I would assume in some cases, hey, if they're getting, three of the four Hanna-Barbera and I do a bundle and they get someone that fourth for long enough, maybe they'll stick with it. So I think he may be in a unique position of directly influencing sales to a much larger degree than people who, than most other people in the industry.
And I absolutely agree with that. I was thinking along a different line. You kind of said how, maybe your typical local store has one or two customers that buy 20 or more books a week, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, if a company like DCBS has, over the last 10 years, soaked up 80% of those people in the country,
yeah,
that hurts a lot of individual stores.
Yes and no.
It goes back to the niche question. Do we need comic shops? Do we want comic shops on every corner in every city, that kind of thing? Or does it become kind of this internet group of people that all order from one or two internet resellers? It's got a community that way. I think
both extremes are bad. I don't want a comic shop on every corner, but I do want a really good one in every major metropolitan area, preferably more than one. A little competition there and stuff. But I do think one of the reasons the last 3 months, prior to September here, were record-breaking sales was because of places like DCBS that, through mail order, through discounting and some stuff like that, were able to retain a segment of readers that might otherwise have been lost through various things that have happened in the industry, price hikes chief among them. There was one point where, immediately before I went with DCBS, where I seriously considered just stop getting comics.
Yeah.
And I can actually put a rough dollar value on what that would mean over that period to the industry.
Yeah.
I think the industry would have survived, obviously.
Of course.
But it's one of those things. It would be very interesting to see how these units every month are split across retailers, split geographically. Are there certain parts of the country that just buy more comics than others? I wish we had more information of that sort. But alas, we do not.
And you mentioned Brian Hibbs. It's interesting because he does his audio show where he kind of goes over with his staff his monthly orders.
Mm-hmm.
And again, major metropolitan area, and thought of as a pretty successful store.
He's been around 20, 25 years. So, yeah, I would say pretty successful.
But it's amazing if you listen kind of closely to those shows. Books that routinely end up in the top 20 are books where he's talking, okay, so we're going to order 25 of those, where you'd think that number would be in the hundreds. And again, it would be very interesting to see when, is a company like DCBS also in the hundreds? Or are they in the thousands? Or are they in the tens of thousands on those books?
Yeah. And are there certain higher profile stores that are catering more towards what I'll term as the eclectic or the more niche properties?
Yeah.
Because you've got retailers that are savvy enough to know they're out there. And a lot of other stores that may make up the bulk of retailers potentially that are just, you know, the Marvel DC kind of properties is mainly their bread and butter.
Yeah, and I'll give a perfect example. There is a store less than a mile from my home that routinely makes the list of like 100 best comic stores in America, you know, is always listed. Hey, when you come to LA, this is one of the stores to check out. Yeah, you know, that those types of lists that I've been in once or twice that I almost have never shopped at. Now, it's not a knock on that store. The store does very well. But I would say 95% of the things on their shelves aren't in the top 200.
And I think there's a segment of the audience that would love a store like that because that's what they're looking for.
Absolutely.
And a segment that it's like, no, I want that Batman book. I want that Harley Quinn book.
Exactly. Like I said, yeah, absolutely. There are people that just heard me say that went, oh, I wish I lived there. That's the greatest store ever. I wish there were more stores like that. And there's another group that goes, yeah, I wouldn't shop there either.
There's a part of me that if I could do it profitably, I would love to tour the country and just go through all the different comic stores and kind of profile them as to, you know, I mean, what is the average comic store really like?
Yeah.
And without setting foot in most of them, I would have no way of really knowing. I don't think anyone does. There's a couple of people who think they do, but really, if you're outside of the industry, I would be surprised how many people have really set foot in enough stores to have a representative sample.
Yeah.
And I would question how many people in the industry have done that as well.
Also probably true.
If it's more than like two or three dozen right now, I would be surprised.
Yeah.
A lot of it with these numbers is you just, there's so many different perspectives to look at them from.
Well, and they're so big. And when I say that, I literally mean they represent essentially the direct market in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've talked about, it's very difficult to know what the direct market in the United States represents. You know, we really don't know. Do the big mail order companies represent a tenth of this list, 60% of this list, 80% of this list? Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, with the spinner rack having long since effectively ceased to exist in almost every way, shape, and form. I mean, yes, there are still some newsstand sales out there and a few things like that, but it's not a viable way to be a serious reader of comics, in my opinion.
No.
Now, if you're in maybe Manhattan or some other major uber metropolitan area, maybe there are some exceptions to this.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we hear from so many people on how there's not even a decent comic store within an hour's driving distance of them,
yeah,
much less a newsstand spinner rack kind of equivalent.
Well, I was going to say, most, if you're in a fairly large metropolitan area, chances are there's still a Barnes & Noble somewheres. And I believe they still carry single issues on the newsstand.
Last I looked, though, it was a very meager selection.
That I agree with. I didn't say they had a ton.
And Toys R Us had comics last I looked.
Oh, okay.
But once you got past Doctor Who, Superman, Batman, and I'm trying to think if they even had any Marvel books. I mean, it was a very small subset.
Yeah.
And again, I'm sure there are places out there where there is a newsstand that's got an amazing selection, but that's the exception, not the rule.
Yeah.
So 3 months of record-breaking sales in a row.
Yep.
Then we hit this month. Not so much. I would love to say it was a fourth record-breaking month, but it was not. It was down 1.8 million units. And when I first looked at that, it's like, well, damn, I figured it wouldn't be another record-breaking month, but plummeting like that, where did those sales go? And it was interesting because it was split pretty evenly between Marvel and DC. And it was one of those things that the other publishers, there was some loss there, but nothing compared to the fairly sharp declines at both Marvel and DC. And to me, the change in how the other publishers did was kind of, you know, within the regular month-to-month noise. And if you look at Marvel
but
and...
not awful.
In terms of the other publishers? Or what?
Well, in terms of the whole list. Let's, if we're going to talk about it, let's kind of look at what we're talking about. Yes, last month we had the record-breaking sales. We had approximately 9.35 million units for 34.1 million retail dollars, right?
Mm-hmm.
This month we were at 7.5 million units and 27.2 million in retail dollars. That still, other than the last 3 months, is the largest unit number for the year. So still well ahead of January through May.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing, that 27 million in retail is larger than all months except the last three and just slightly smaller than April.
I'm not suggesting that suddenly sales have plummeted and the industry is doomed or something like that.
Yeah, it wasn't like they had a
sales
horrible
month. Have plummeted, but from a record high.
Yeah, exactly.
That, third I get record high in a row, even. So I agree with your point there. But there are a couple of interesting trends to note.
Okay.
If you go back to the Marvel sales for June, which was just over 4 million units, then you look at their July and August sales, which were around almost 3.25. And then we're down here this month in September at under 2.5.
Yes, this is Marvel's lowest unit month of the year. That, yes.
Or previous year, or almost the year before.
Okay, well, okay. February was close.
Marvel's in a very awkward position right now, and the reason for that is they've been doing kind of what I would call the crop rotation model, and we've talked about it before. It's like, hey, this title's playing out, let's replace it with a different Avenger title, then a different Avenger title. We've had Thor going for a bit, let's go with a new Thor and call it Mighty Thor. We're going to have, you know, Unworthy Thor for a miniseries, and who knows, after that, maybe we'll have a new Thor title. You know, we're going through Iron Man titles and all these other things faster than you know, almost ever before. And what happened is Marvel is at a point right now where they have a ton of titles that are in that playing out stage, and they've had about a 12-week or so period, I forget exactly how long, but about that long, where they had no real major new ongoing series launch. If you go back to, I think it was one of the Deadpool ones, probably Mercs for the Money, they just really haven't had another major launch since then, up through September. Now,
I'm looking, and I did go back just to find, the last time Marvel shipped fewer units was February of 14.
Yeah, like I said, it's a couple of years.
It was barely under.
But if you look from July 20th, when Deadpool and Mercs for the Money number one launched,
mm-hmm.
you can go all the way through the end of September with no other major launch from Marvel, which is highly unusual. Because they often are kicking out a new major number one of some variant, some degree, every week. Now, with October, we got Champions number one, we got Jessica Jones number one, we're getting more number ones now. This is something that is already, the correction is in place, we just don't see it with these numbers yet.
Well, and I want to bring this up, because you and Drew reviewed, I believe, a new Iron Man book on the Weekly Spotlight this week?
What did we review this? We reviewed...
It was an Iron Man book.
Okay, I've already recorded another episode since then.
Sorry. The last episode I heard,
yes,
which is
yes.
the one that released on Halloween.
Infamous Iron Man. Thank you. Yes, it took me a bit to... I'm going through so many comics these days. So many come out.
And again, obviously, I'm not trying to put words in Drew's mouth or anyone else's.
I'll do that. No.
Drew seemed, I think, visibly on the episode and says as much. That he's kind of sick and tired of this kind of business practice out of Marvel and was really kind of frustrated and down on them as a whole.
I would say that's an accurate assessment.
In reviewing that particular book, and we've talked about that for 2-3 years. is there a point where people get sick of the new number one every 3 months? And Drew obviously is very anecdotal. He's a single person. But I'm not sure he doesn't represent a percentage of the audience, and I'm not sure how big that percentage is.
I think it doesn't matter to a certain degree if people are tired of these new number ones as Marvel is rotating through titles. And the reason I say that is whether people are tired of it or not, there is a certain expense in promoting all of these new number ones to get people that were on one of the Iron Man books onto one of the new Iron Man books. You know, for instance, you went from Invincible Iron Man and International Iron Man to a new Invincible Iron Man, I think it is, and now Infamous Iron Man.
Yeah.
And
well, this... that was funny. Well, Drew talked about the general frustration. From you, I got, they did this not that long ago. They did this. You kind of went through it story beat by story beat and go, we've seen all of these things in the last 3 years.
And we'll see them again and again and again.
Yes.
And when I was going through the numbers for September, I had there'd been something I've been trying to I don't say put my finger on, but articulate, crystallize in my mind that I think I'm almost having crystallized.
Okay.
As just a different way to be looking at these numbers, because we're going through so many different titles on a regular basis that there are certain books this month that fall into very clearly distinct categories. If you look at the top of, before we get to the top of the list, get to the top of the list, but we'll get back to the breakdown at some point. We kind of skipped over that, but that's
do we want to look at the new sheet at all? Since we're kind of
that's
talking
kind
that area?
Of what I want to talk about through the top 300, and then we'll look at the new sheet that's still a work in progress.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, top item on the list is Batman number 6, 138,853 units, down about 2.3% from the previous issue.
Yep,
that is a continuing title. That title shipped last month. It was on the list last month. It's on the list again this month. Batman is one that all in a not an ideal world, but an acceptable world, we'll say, Batman would sell X amount this month, and if there was a sales equilibrium, which there is not, but if there were, it would sell that same X on the next issue and the next issue and the next issue. Okay, now there is a standard attrition which acts almost like the force of gravity on sales, so there's a few percentage point loss to here. We'll say that's roughly it. I got to work out exactly what it is these days on an issue-to-issue basis, because I think now that they're going bi-monthly, it's changed a little bit. But there's a certain expectation that, okay, you did 138,853, you should do roughly within a few percentage points of that on the next issue. And sure enough, down at rank number 3, down about 2.35%, is number 7 at 135,585 units. Okay, so there's a certain, you didn't recoup everything on the next issue, but continuing titles count for a lot, okay? But then there are a few other kinds of titles. If we look at number 4, rank number 4 here, we've got Civil War 2 number 5, 120,208 units. That's actually down 5.25% from the fourth issue. But what's important to note about the Civil War title is it doesn't ship every month. It actually skipped over last month.
But it does have months where it puts out two.
It does. It does. Another example of this is, if we go further on the list, is Astro City.
City is very different, yeah.
Well, hang on. It didn't ship last month, but it shipped two issues this month in September, because September had 5 weeks. September had 5 weeks. No, it had 4 weeks, but it somehow it got on there. It must have been a week late. Whatever.
Okay.
So, there's a certain amount of sales that show up on a list in a given month that, for whatever reason, it's late, it's bi-monthly, it's just, you know, it's on hiatus, like a saga sort of a title. Those sales get suspended for a duration. In other words, they just don't show up on a month's list. They're not lost, they're just not there. So to me, that non-shipping, that suspended sales is relevant as a category of books.
I agree with you. How do I want to put this? You have a category in one of your lists where you have suspended sales, and then you have kind of annual specials.
Let me go through the groups I've got. I've got continuing books that shipped last month, came again this month.
Yep.
So from a month-to-month perspective on consecutive months, this is either up, down, or the same.
Yep.
You've got new titles, which the top one this month would be Trinity number 1, 93,797 units. These are new to the list. This title did not exist prior to this month, so it is a net add.
Okay.
You then have the suspended books, which are books that were on the list last month, aren't on the list this month, but presumably will be next month or in a later month.
Okay.
So again, not lost, but not here.
Okay.
Then you have returning sales, and I've still got to work on the nomenclature and the terminology for this, because I'm not totally happy with this.
Those are the ones that were suspended last month.
And came back. Now, they could have been suspended for 1 month, 10 months, who knows?
Yep.
But then the two other major categories I've got are reorder activity, because to me that's a separate beast than just the regular title itself. Because, frankly, reorder activity is a little bit of an oddity. There are some titles, like Civil War might be one of them, Batman, a few others, where you're going to have some strong repeat reorder activity. But I would say for the majority of the list, reorder just, it frankly doesn't happen. So okay. I consider that something that is not the sort of category of sales that if you have this month, you would expect to have next month. And then that final one is the annual slash special, where there are certain things where, for the purposes of breaking it down this way, I am treating, say, the, where is a good example? I think we had a Doctor Strange annual on here. We had Extraordinary X-Men annual down at rank 72. It's the first annual, 38,871 units. There are some other annuals on here, I'm sure. Obviously, it's an annual. You don't expect this to show up next month.
Okay.
In theory, it'll show up next year, but given how titles aren't really lasting that whole year duration all that much anymore, I consider these kind of equivalent of one-shots.
Mm-hmm. I agree with all of that.
So, again, treating those as a separate category. And what I did is I stacked up the sales this month based on continuing, which was the majority of it, followed by the new sales. Then you had a little bit for returning, and, you know, a little bit for the annuals, a little bit for the order. Obviously, you've got nothing for suspended because, well, they're not there this month. And if you look at this, and I did some rough calculations over the last couple of months, the reason the last 3 months were so strong was they had just crazy strong new issue sales. Mm-hmm. New title sales, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Because typically what's happening is the new title sales are competing against the drop in continuing titles and the temporary loss of non-shipping titles. And it's the net of those that really determine, is this an up month or a down month?
I agree with everything you said. I have one minor quibble with nomenclature slash should it go in its own category.
Absolutely. This is a work in progress.
Yeah, and the only thing I was going to say, and since we started with Civil War II, to me, Civil War II almost fits in the suspended category. Not because literally it was suspended this month, but I would argue Marvel is good for 9 to 12 major event titles a year. And I'd kind of almost put that as its own ongoing. Yes, they have different names and different numbers, but essentially Marvel's going to put out between 8 and 12 event issues a year. DC seems to be down a little. They tend to be more in the 5 to 7 a year range.
I see where you're coming from, but there's a couple of reasons I did not go down that road.
Okay.
Because one could argue that certain books are just, well, it's a continuation of the previous volume, just under a different name. Is it really a new thing or not?
Mm-hmm.
That's a losing analysis approach.
And the reason for that is automated analysis is difficult, yes.
Even for manual analysis.
Fair enough.
I mean, you go back to when the Fantastic Four ended after they killed off one of the members and got replaced by Future Foundation. Well, clearly, Future Foundation is the replacement title for Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
For a year, you'd have been right up until the point that it continued and Fantastic Four resumed.
Yeah.
You know, right now, you've got two Iron Man titles getting replaced by two other Iron Man titles, which is which replacement? So I don't think there's as clear of a antecedent successor sort of thing with comics these days.
I agree with you. I would argue though that one could argue with like your Fantastic Four thing. Okay, there was one Fantastic Four book, then it was called Fantastic Four. Then there was still one Fantastic Four book. It was called Future Foundation. Then there were two Fantastic Four books, one called Future Foundation, one called Fantastic Four again. And you kind of do it that way. I understand it's a pain. It's difficult, possibly impossible, and would require, you know, almost a full-time person to do that. I get that. The other thing, though, I just, again, I would argue the line-wide kind of yearly events, admittedly that Marvel has done more consistently than DC. DC's done them, but in different ways, is almost like the ongoing, hey, here's the, you know, you could argue last year's Secret Wars into this year's Civil War II into whatever the next one's going to be, is the ongoing Marvel Universe title.
I mean, I get what you're saying, and I do think there is a rationale for that. I would treat that as a grouping of titles that is sparsely populated. In other words, there's this event group.
Yeah.
That's where Secret Wars, Civil War II, those sorts of things fall into. Because you could have some that are concurrent.
Yes.
Such as, say, Civil War II and Death of X. Just like you could have Avengers as a category, X-Men as a category, and it fluctuates over time as to how many titles it does or doesn't have.
Yeah.
But to do all of that, you need to have somebody pretty on the ball to be putting things into those right groupings. And the rules I was imposing on myself for all of this, because I want to take this kind of a model as to this title status, new, suspended, continuing, whatever they wind up being, and apply this back through time. Because I think we're at a point where we're seeing a fundamentally higher amount of books ending and being replaced with new titles. And the reality is, a new title is likely to end up higher on the list than a title exiting the list.
Well, and I made this argument several times in the last couple of years, that if, you know, person X buys 10 books a month, and they're constantly buying one or two number ones to check them out, supposedly, in quotes, by definition, they will always cycle through those 10 books. If there's two, you know, let's say you buy 10 books and one of them is a number one every month, which I think is low for the average reader, but let's just say 10% of the books they buy are number ones. Within 10 months, you will have had the opportunity to cycle through your entire list.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of argued that Marvel took advantage of that for the last 2 to 3 years. And the theory was, well, I've been reading Batman for a year and I like Batman. And I've been reading Spider-Man for a year, and I like Spider-Man, and I've been reading, you know, whatever. Other, you know, character A, B, and C, let's not give them names, for a year, and I like all three characters. But I want to try character D, and he's got a big, fancy number one. Your choice as a reader is, let's say you've been buying 3 books a month, mm-hmm. A, B, and C, and you are sold with the marketing of you've got to try book D. Your option is either to increase from 3 to 4 books a month, or to simply replay, decide, well, I really like A a lot. That's not going anywhere. B and C, which one do I like more? Well, let's see. We're going to say I like B a little better. So maybe I'll drop C and try D.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that every month, within 12 months, you will have nothing left on your list that was there, you know. Neither A, B, nor C will be on the list. And if they are, chances are they will have returned at some point with one of their own highly marketed number ones.
Statistically speaking, yes, realistically, I think there's always going to be an A book for somebody that stays on the list. It's their anchor book.
I agree with that. But the question is it A and B for many people? Is it A, B, and C for, you know, how many people is it really only A? Or, you know, again, let's say it's 10 books and 1 and 2 are never coming off the list regardless. Those other 8, you might cycle through every 6 months.
Well, I think the books that aren't coming off the list regardless is a very, very small number of possible titles, because reality is, even if you accept this Batman is a continuation of the previous Batman, and therefore there's a continuity there, and it was still the same book, which, okay, fine.
Okay.
There are so few of those titles that last for a sustained number of years that it's, I, again, the odds are really good something's going to get bumped off the list simply because it's stopped being published.
I agree. Well, I can tell you for myself, literally from when I've read virtually no comic books a month to reading 100 a month, there's two titles that have essentially survived. Even the months where it was zero, somehow I managed to buy those two or pick them up later or something. And so that's just kind of, you know, and I think there are many comic fans that are kind of like that. In my particular case, it's Batman and G.I. Joe. Whatever, it is what it is. Yours might be something else. That's not the point. But everything else has fluctuated. The third one that was in that category until about a decade ago was Spider-Man.
Well, I think the trick to the crop rotation publishing approach is to have a game plan that has a certain sustainability to it. And it's one thing to say, okay, Amazing Spider-Man's going away, getting replaced with Superior Spider-Man, which is going away, getting replaced by Amazing Spider-Man again, or, you know, whatever, because there's a clear progression there.
Yep.
But it's when you stop having that clear progression and transition and exit strategy from a title for a reader. I mean, going from Grayson to Nightwing, okay, that makes sense. You know, going from you know, Green Lantern Corps. Well, do you go with Hal Jordan in the Green Lantern Corps? Do you go with Green Lanterns? You know, that gets a little less clear, and there are some other cases where it's just, geez, I don't know. You know?
No, and it absolutely is unclear at times. I think that unclarity sometimes hurts.
Well, and the other thing that has become increasingly clear to me over the last couple of months is we have undergone a very subtle yet dramatic shift in the comic market. And I think I continue to think there's a ton of value in looking at issue over issue sales for titles. How did these things go up and down?
Yep.
However, as the number of titles shipping multiple times a month has dramatically increased, I think there's also a need to start looking at this on a title by title basis on a month to month basis. In other words, Batman is at rank 1 and 3. Civil War is at rank number 4. But if you look at it just strictly aggregate for the title basis, Batman is clearly in the first position with over a quarter million units, actually 274,438. And Civil War 2 is in rank by title 11. And it's not even a top 10 title this month. Because, again, other titles are bringing in more units because they're shipping more issues.
Yeah.
Now, should we be looking at the aggregate for the title at that point? Maybe we should be looking at the average. I don't know. Maybe there's value in both perspectives. But looking at how much the title is bringing in month to month, has it gone up? Has it gone down?
Which is why I think there's some... I'm trying to think how to put this.
Well, and this is where Civil War showing an increase from month to month of 120,000 because it skipped last month is misleading. It's not an increase, it's a return.
I agree with that. With the big two, it's easier. I would argue you could almost argue by editorial office. Because, I mean, you could essentially argue Batman is number one, because not only is he number one, he essentially holds the top three spots on the list. The one we haven't discussed is number two, which is All-Star Batman number two at 137,000.
But that's... at that point, you're grouping by character.
Yes.
And that's a different kind of a grouping than an actual title and creative team. Now, granted, creative teams change on titles, absolutely. But I would say grouping All-Star Batman in there, well, at that point, why don't you go ahead and add, I don't know, Detective or Nightwing or the whole Batman family or whatever. And there's a rationale for doing that, but that's a bit of bookkeeping as to know which title is in which group which month, because they flip around.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And one of the again, limitations I placed on this, wanting to do automated analysis, because, well, I was going to say I'm busy.
It already takes a ridiculous amount of your free time.
Yeah. So I wanted something that I could do based on the information that was available.
Yeah.
And specifically, the information available at the time the sales data is originally released.
Yep.
So no long-term kind of look ahead. So it's not like I am looking and saying, well, you know, this given title never shipped again in the next 10 years. I don't know. 10 years haven't happened yet. Now, I could do that for 10 years ago, but that means I'm doing a different analysis on that data than I'm doing on this data, and it's not apples to apples. Okay. Now, it may be fun to do something where there's a different look ahead kind of you know, secondary analysis, but it means from the point of the sales data, I have the sales data for that month and earlier, the shipping data for that month and earlier, probably the first week or two of the next month. I would say I can guarantee the first week of the next month, but that's it. Solicitation data for that month. So when I had the September sales, I also had the October solicit. So that month and the month after, and the cancellation data for that sales month and the month after.
Yep.
So that gives a little bit of a look ahead as to what's been solicited. But there are times it's like, well, geez, is letter 44 continuing or not? I don't see another one solicited. Oh, well, then the next previews came out and it was in there. But it also means that in addition to not really having a look ahead, the hardest part of this that I have yet to figure out a solution for is those suspended sales is really two categories that I really want to break out distinctly. There are those that did not sell or did not ship this month, and there are those that will not ship again because they're over.
Yeah.
And I would love to be able to say how many of these sales exited the list. Finney, that's it. They're done. There will be no more. A good example of that would be at rank. What would be a good example of that?
There's got to be some mini series that ended, right?
I'm going to go, and I'm guessing on this, it might have been a 5 year. No, if you go to rank 111, Civil War II, Gods of War number 4 was the final issue.
Okay.
And I know that because the solicit says final chapter of the Gods of War.
There you go.
But reliably pulling that out of the solicitation blurb, I'm a little not so sure about. That's 20,809 units gone. Not going to happen again next month. Now, it'll get probably replaced by some other book. But again, new titles come in higher, exiting ones go out lower. And to
how
me,
far did you go back?
Hmm?
How far did you go back?
In terms of...
How much data do you have going back that you hadn't looked at? Here's my question. Did Detective in Action reverting to old numbering, when they reverted to the old numbering, show up as returning sales or a new title?
I have not pushed this data that far back.
Fair enough.
This process is still, I am working out the kinks on it for this month. I did a hand analysis going back to the beginning of the year, which is how I was able to uncover August having about 2.4 million units of new titles, but having lost about 2.1 in non-shipping titles.
Yeah.
The previous month having about 2.3, almost an equivalent of new title and non-shipping title. But the previous month, June, that one of those first breakout ones, having over 3 million units of new titles, hey, Rebirth, and 1.6 of non-shipping.
Now,
so
again,
I pushed these back a little bit.
Now, again, as this table of yours continues to grow and grow and grow, and titles get reused...
I'm doing it based on the title and the volume, essentially.
Okay, so...
The year. And okay. That's why it's a little hard to answer how far does this data go back. When I've had to do this analysis, I have looked for, did this title ship previously? Did this title show up on the list previously?
Yeah.
Now, the truth of the matter is, I don't have anywhere near 100% of the items I've got on the top 300 comics list going back, way back. I don't have it fully cleaned.
Yeah.
Because I don't always have time every month to get to the bottom of the list and make sure I've got that item at rank 300 cleaned or whatever.
Anything
that's got a parenthetical year, I have hopefully got correct and have cleaned.
Yeah, which is almost all of them now. And in some cases, I don't see any of the A's and B's left, but there are times you've had to go to C.
Again, that's only if they launched twice within a year.
Yep.
So that's rare. But if you go down to, what's the first rank, right?
But it's happened.
Rank 188, Lumberjanes Gotham Academy. I didn't clean that when it first launched, so I don't have that correctly attributed to having launched in this year. But I don't have that for any of them. At some point, I should go and clean that up. But getting to the point where I can identify this title is no more, and those suspended sales are no longer frozen, they're gone, they're dead, and they've expired in some sense, would be good. Because I was able to break down the 100 or a million and 800,000 ish loss in sales into the categories of you know, what was up, what was down, what was which percentage of this. And I found that personally kind of interesting.
Well, I agree. And what we discovered, for the most part, new sales are new sales.
Mm-hmm.
And continuing and suspended titles make up the vast majority of the losses.
Yeah. If you could sustain sales and not lose stuff from issue to issue, that would help a lot. It would not necessarily help enough, because you got to ship the title every month. So I think there's a certain aspect of just, and they're doing it by going to the more frequent shipping. If you clean that aspect of things up and get things coming out on a regular cadence, that gives you a regular sales.
Well, and I think the double shipping, as much as some people have complained, and to me it's arbitrary, and there's no reason it can't, you know.
Clarify.
We expect TV shows to be weekly. So they air two in a week. We go, wow, they showed us a lot. We're either, and as you've talked about with comics that double ship, we're either really enjoying that and happier that there's more, or we're on the fence and go, that's a little extra.
I'll be honest. I am at the point where I'm considering cutting back on what I'm reading because the stuff's coming out too fast.
I agree. But part of that is just a long-term ingrained thing in all of our psyche, that comics come out monthly.
I disagree with that.
If that
I think that's true, but for me...
If it shifted to bi-weekly, you'd be in a... You'd still have the same problem, but you'd be looking at it differently. If comics had always come out every 2 weeks, you would probably simply read fewer titles.
To me, it's not how frequently the titles come out. It's the number of issues they're releasing. I would be having the same problem if it was not action coming out every other week, but it was action versus Superman versus Man of Steel versus...
Back to the Shield days, where it was 4 a month. But that's kind of my point. It's, while, yes, more things are coming out, that, you know, and again, back to the television analogy, there's many more channels than there used to be. But we're still kind of used to, there's about 22 episodes in a season, and in season we get one a week. They could, in theory, show those to us one a night for 22 straight nights, and then it wouldn't come back for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd think, oh my God, how am I going to watch all this? But a lot of that is perspective.
Agreed. But I think the risk Marvel and DC are running right now with the more frequent release schedule is, even if people are enjoying the stuff, it's coming out faster than they have time to digest, because they have lives, jobs, etc. So having a regular pace of release that is fast enough but not too fast. In other words, I think if DC had gone not to, let's do twice a month, but from every month to every 3 weeks, that in of itself would have sped up the release a bit, but maybe not as much as to be, geez, I just read the previous issue with this.
Okay, but again, you go back to the history. Marvel, this month, put out 77 items. DC put out 76. Mm-hmm. Okay? Let's just randomly, I'm going up somewhere. Where did I end up? I ended up in...
The problem isn't how many issues or how many...
12. We're about the same numbers.
We are, but they're focusing on fewer properties, mm-hmm. and therefore if you are following a character, you're getting more comics. And part of this is, yes, Flash used to be once a month, now it's twice. Yeah. I mean, so I get what you're saying there, and I agree with that.
But again, if you follow Superman, you're getting less titles. Go back to the Shield era, you literally had one a week. Now you get four a month. You get about 48 a year instead of 52 a year, because they got rid of the quarterly book. You've got two shipping twice a month, and you got rid of the quarterly book.
Okay, but okay. Batman, I'm now getting, you know, two Batmans. I've got All-Star. You could argue if Detective's still a Batman book or not.
Okay.
Some of it's perspective.
That's all I'm saying. I think if you, as a reader, you follow an individual title, it feels like a glut. From a complete outsider with more, again, if a television show, for instance, was to run all 22 episodes week to week to week for 22 straight weeks, you'd go, wow, there's a lot more television. But as an alien who just, you know, came from another planet, came and said, well, you got a TV with 300 channels. There's something on all 300 of them all the time. There's the same amount of television on.
when people say there's so much of it right now, it's because it's so much they find interesting.
Exactly.
It's an embarrassment of riches because they finally honed in on what you're interested in.
Yeah, exactly. And
on TV, I'm having this problem because I want to watch Arrow, Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Timeless, trying to think what else I'm trying to keep up on these days. It's coming out fast and furious, which is a good problem to have.
Which is interesting because all the shows you just mentioned are primetime broadcast shows.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, in the last 25 years, we have added two networks. However, in general, with seasons going from 36 to 32 to 26 to 24 to 22 episodes, there's actually less new content on television now than there was 25 years ago.
Yet we all more of it of interest to me.
Exactly. But we all feel like there's more of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it's a sign of they're finally getting the stuff that we want.
Yeah.
Now, there are other people who may be missing the stuff that's no longer on the air as a result of that.
Yeah.
But with the comics here, I don't feel like I have radically changed my buying criteria.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm getting literally twice as many comics as I was around the time I started the podcast back in 2007. Absolutely. 2006, 2007.
I completely understand, and I hear it in your voice every week, and you know, you go over what you're reading, and you finally kind of sort of got caught up to be put behind again, even by not going out of town or taking a vacation.
Yeah.
It's
one of those things that by reaching deeper into my wallet, by increasing the frequency of this stuff, the publishers are running the risk of getting a lot less of my money.
Yep.
And I think there are certain things these publishers are doing that is incredibly counterproductive. There were some comments on the forum about how some people are sitting out of Clone Conspiracy because it's a $4.99 book.
Yep.
And you know what? That's a very legit reason to sit out a book. I'll say this.
It doesn't affect the amount of money Marvel makes off of me per se, because I have gone pretty much all unlimited with Marvel. But I made the decision, I was starting to make the decision 6-8 months ago, and it's kind of fully made now, and I've kind of committed to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about what's happening in Marvel. Because of the constant reboots, and we talked about this last time with the delays in the events and then causing the new universe after the event to come out before the event finishes.
Yeah.
And then with Unlimited being 6 months behind, I'm like, no, I'm going back and reading the stuff I either missed or knew I enjoyed from kind of the Silver and the Bronze Age. And that's the bulk of my Marvel reading. Again, to them, it cost them nothing because I'm literally giving them the exact same amount of money every month. If anything, it gives them reason not to produce anything new, which does cost them money, because I would lose nothing if they put out nothing new, because I've decided, because when I first got Marvel Unlimited, the theory was, let's stay right up, I can read every Marvel book exactly 6 months behind.
Mm-hmm.
And that became so frustrating, I said, okay, forget that. I'm going to go back and read 1976 from start to finish.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Because, you know, keeping up 6 months back was just infuriating.
Well, I think these publishers have lost sight of the hobby aspect, and the fan perspective, because whilst each of the different companies I think are trying to do the right thing as they see it, they're in varying jeopardies of losing at least my business, if not other people's as well. You know, again, right now Marvel's in a bit of an ebb as titles are playing through, and I mean the number of titles right now Marvel has lower on the list in that, you know, 10 to 20,000 range is staggering. I mean, it's just more titles are there than I would have ever expected Marvel to have had. I mean, starting at the bottom, Drax, Nighthawk, Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, Patsy Walker, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Nova, Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, Mockingbird, Scarlet Witch, Inhuman, Venom Space Knight, Rocket Raccoon and Groot, Web Warriors, Spidey, Astonishing Ant-Man, Spider-Woman, Squadron Supreme, Thunderbolts, Karnak, X-Men 92, Carnage, Vision just barely gets above the 20,000 mark. Which is ironic because it's ending because Tom King's gone exclusive with DC. But out of the ones I just listed off, I think Astonishing Ant-Man has ended. I'm not positive. I know Mockingbird ended. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I think, ended. Drax, I think, ended. This goes back to I'm having a hard time figuring out what is definitively dead and what's not.
Yeah.
DC is at least pretty good about declaring it's a final issue.
Well, and that's the other thing we've talked about for years. I think we agree on this, even though we may be, or maybe others would disagree with us, that I would say the median age of comic readers has aged significantly in the last 25 years.
I would say correspondingly with the amount of time.
Fair enough. I wouldn't say quite that, but yes, it has aged. And the other thing, this goes back to that nicheiness aspect. We're talking about, you know, much of comic fandom, at least in my life, it's become internet-based. It's become, you know, it's the forums. So I used to be able to spend a good amount of my hobby time reading comics because I'd read comics, I'd go to dinner with friends and we'd talk about comics, or I'd go to the comic shop and we'd play games and talk about comics.
Mm-hmm.
My discussions about comics are now pretty much relegated to online forums and doing this podcast with you and some things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which means I still have social interactions with coworkers, friends, you know, other things of people that no longer are comic readers. Which means I have to have other things to talk about with them. Which means even of my free time, I can't dedicate as much to comics because I don't have a group of people that dedicates all, you know what I mean? Does that make any sense?
They don't have the same social currency they did once did for you.
Exactly. I mean, it used to be, you know, when you were in high school, I could read comics. I'd go to school and I'd sit at lunch and talk with my friends. We'd talk about comics. Now did I watch the baseball game last night? Did I watch this show? Because when I go to the office and go to lunch with my coworkers, we may talk about those things. We're not talking about the last comic book that came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of those that, you know, it's kind of like talking sports with people who don't care about sports.
Yeah.
You do that with me, I'm going to fall asleep because I really don't follow any of this stuff.
Exactly.
You know, with the sports. You know, so I get different people have different things, different topics that have social currency for them.
I'm just not sure comics have the social currency they once did.
I think they do and they don't.
Okay.
I think they don't in terms of print comics per se.
Okay.
But I think the properties being published in these comics have more social currency than ever before.
I don't even watch The Walking Dead and the TV show, yet I've been involved in more Walking Dead discussions in the last 3 years than I ever was when I was reading the comic every month.
Mm-hmm. That between Walking Dead, the DC TV shows, the Marvel movies, the stuff on Netflix for the Marvel characters, there's a lot of this stuff that you can carry on and actively participate in a good conversation about these properties with people that have never read and may never read a comic book.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, a lot of these are properties that, man, it would take a tiny percentage of the people who enjoyed the stuff to dramatically increase the sales of this stuff. You know, as tidbits are coming out about the new Wolverine movie, you know, you look at the various Wolverine titles that are showing up on the list. Granted, they're often not featuring that character because he's currently kind of, sort of, but not totally dead. You know, again, it's crazy.
Well, he exists, so you know he has to get better at some point, or the other version would never exist, right?
Crop rotation. Wolverine comes back.
He has to at some point because we know he exists later.
Well, the other one is from another timeline, so Old Man Logan does not necessitate Wolverine coming back.
Fair enough.
However, Old Man Logan's going to play out, all new Wolverine's going to play out, and at the end of some event, it'll be time to get Wolverine out of the Animantium, and he will have been, you know, healed and whatnot. He will undie through some shenanigan or another. It's just a question of the speed with which they do it. And again, the speed with which they do it burns people out. I think the other thing, and Dan Didio made a comment at one point along these lines of he doesn't see Marvel as competition for DC. He sees the DC TV shows as and movies as competition, because they're telling their stories. And for me, that really hit home with the Flash number 9 that Drew and I just reviewed the other night when we recorded. It'll go up right before this episode.
Okay.
Because there was a moment in that comic that was similar to a moment from the Flash TV show. But when I read it in the comic, I'm like, oh, okay, I blatantly obvious where they're going. Great, get on with it. When I saw it in the TV show, I'm like, oh, wow, that's cool. I can't wait for that. So, you know, I get that competition and stuff. But again, it's something where the cultural currency I get out of reading the current issue of the Flash comic book is reasonably minimal in terms of, do I have other people to discuss the comic with? But it's got a certain degree of social currency, in so much as I know enough people at work and elsewhere that are watching the TV show that I can be giving them some context and whatnot that they don't get because they don't read the comic.
Yeah.
But it's...
Well, I think it's one of the reasons I love listening particularly to the comic, movie, and TV podcast you do with Kay.
Uh-huh.
Because you get that perspective. Like, oh, John gets to... Kay loves the fact that John can leverage all of his knowledge against comics that she didn't have to read, but she can learn it all.
Yeah. That is one of the things that, because we do the TV stuff at end of season, mm-hmm. I wish there was a way to capture some of the discussions we have during some of the episodes.
Yeah.
Because, like, with Arrow, I've been commenting on how one of those characters, it's like, do you know how many issues that character has shown up in? It's like a handful. This other character they don't seem to be doing much with that you don't like, because there's one she's just not real fond of.
Okay.
He's going to be around, I think, almost all season because his series lasted a lot longer. And I could be wrong about that. But it's one of those things that, again, there's a certain baggage I bring to these TV shows, having been a hardcore comic book reader for Marvel and DC for decades, that gives me a different... experience than somebody who's coming at the characters as if they are brand new, never been seen before anywhere. So it's interesting. It's just surprising to me that at times there is so little bleed over from that audience into the sales figures we see here. And it's funny because I think right now DC is, I mean, if you look at the DC sales over the last couple of months, what's interesting to me is not just that they're really robust and really strong and that the rebirth stuff seems to have really clicked with people. This is 3 months of in a row with DC having the larger share of the pie than Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
The only other time that happened was at the beginning of New 52.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from that second month of the New 52 where they did it by gangbusters because all the number ones and number twos were out, after that, it was just by a few percentage points. It was not a decisive victory. It was close. DC's increase has been increasing over the last few months. Marvel, a couple of months ago, had a lead of about 10%. Then DC had a lead of about 8.5%. Then about 15%. This time, only 16%. So it increased only a hair. But it's showing a certain degree of momentum that they didn't have with the New 52. But it's also one that is about to reverse pretty seriously, maybe not in the next month or two, but certainly after that, when we start getting some of the other things that Marvel has kicked into gear. I mean, we've got a bunch of new titles like Champions and Jessica Jones starting up. But man, when things kick in like US Avengers with the 60 variant covers and stuff, oh, come on, that's going to top the list. So it'll be a new title, huge sales, and then the next month the continuing version of that title will plummet comparatively because it will not have 60 different covers. Go figure.
We'll have to wait and see. I have no predictions other than I am very intrigued. And yes, it's all anecdotal. It's the forums. It's a few friends I have that still read comics. It's the last weekly comic spotlight. It's some of the people I play games with at a comic store. There is a growing frustration among Marvel fans.
Yes.
And it will be interesting to see what effect that has in the next relaunch and really even possibly the one after that.
Well, and I think Marvel having gone so whole hog into the season mentality, which on the one hand I get, on the other hand I think is a colossal mistake. And one of the things Drew and I talked about in the episode we recorded just the night before last, so you haven't heard it yet as we record this, we reviewed Vision number 12, end of that series.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of most Marvel books, of which there have been many ending issues of the last week or two, there's often the text page at the end of, I can't believe the series is over, it's only been so many issues, I thought it would last forever, sort of. And I'm exaggerating a little, but, you know, it's one of those things, you know, a couple of years ago, I can see the tearful farewell in the letter page. You know, you've done a couple of years of the book, it ended, you've earned it. A book that maybe lasted 8 months? No, come on. This was a glorified mini-series, essentially. Maybe it wasn't planned that way. Maybe you didn't want it that way. I feel for you. Some of these I would love to have last longer. Mockingbird is one of them. But you haven't been on it long enough to have gotten... Clearly, they had been on it long enough to have gotten that attached to the job. But you know what I mean.
Well, but you as a reader wasn't on it long enough to get that attached.
Yeah.
And I don't think... I think there's other... I don't think you represent an insignificant... I don't think that feeling... is insignificant among a percentage of the readers.
And this is not a new problem. I recall years and years ago when the Mike Parabik-drawn JSA series came out. This was before Jeff Johns had gotten all the characters. Third issue had hit the racks, time of Comic-Con, and I was telling somebody at DC how much I was loving the book. And they were kind of astonished, because in their mind, it was over, done with, canceled, kaput. It still had another 7 issues to go before it died a premature death of 10 issues. So this sort of a thing of short-lived titles has happened before, but then it was anomalous. Now it is par for the course. You know, I would be interested in what people think would be useful groupings of issue numbers. To imagine if you had this stack of, again, roughly 7.5 million units, and it was broken down into how many of those units went to first issues, and then should the next group just be second to third and fourth issues? Should it be up to 6 issues, i.e. the start of the rest of that first arc? You know, what would be those useful groupings of issue numbers to segment the rest of the sales by? Because obviously you've got a few that are in kind of that 500 and over. Really, almost anything over 100 should probably get lumped into the same group because there's so few of those titles. It's just how granular do you make those breakouts because titles are lasting so infrequently. If we look at the list this time around, let's see, 12 issues or less is 3/4 of the list. I mean, that's just insane, but increasingly common and will be increasingly common. You know, again, I've said for years, we run the risk of the growing forest of dying trees. If you can't get 2 story arcs out, the title kind of died before it hit the point where it should really be able to spawn off another title. Now, obviously, they're just revoluming and cheating, essentially, but it's not good. You know, there are a lot of books on this list that, you know, in some cases dropped a crazy amount, but in other cases, a lot of them didn't do that bad. And I think there's an aspect of the crop rotation strategy that there's some bad timing on Marvel's part right now. They're just in an awkward phase of the titles have to play out, and they've already got the replacement titles announced, so it's just give it a little time, it'll correct. Valiant's been doing a pretty good job with that crop rotation mentality. Titan, however, really, they've branched out. They had 6 different versions of the Doctor on the list this time around.
Yes.
Not counting Supremacy of the Cybermen miniseries. That's like half the incarnations. And some of them are just miniseries because the fourth Doctor's series was concluding as they launched the third Doctor's and stuff like that. But they've gotten into a rhythm that seems to be working well for them. Now, granted, the sales aren't, you know, gangbusters, but they're good enough, I think, for them to keep going. I'm just trying to look at different ways to look at the month-to-month changes to get a better sense of what they can be attributed to. And again, it's really how much of that loss is coming from titles that don't ship versus just declines in sales. and how much of that is or isn't made up for by strong launches of new titles. Because the rotation of titles only works as long as you keep rotating them and they keep launching strong. And again, Marvel right now, that was their weak point. DC, of course, not going with the rapid rotation of titles, which I think is a smart move. But the question is, how long do the Rebirth titles, do they make it up to issue 52 or not? Because, you know, when I was going through the most recent previews to get my picks for that, for the preview spotlight, I was really surprised how many of these things, hey, that one's cool, that one's cool, that one's cool. And a couple other publishers, like, you know, there's really nothing that's exciting me there. So I think we're in for, as always, a couple of interesting months. I think Marvel's got a couple of surefire hits, at least for first issues coming up. But again, I expect to see some pretty heavy losses on those continuing titles on those second months.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on just about everything you just said.
I didn't think any of it was highly controversial, but I appreciate
also it. True. I wish I had something to add, but I don't.
We had a couple of launches this month from DC with Rebirth, skipping the Rebirth issue, but actually going for the number ones. Blue Beetle was at 52,230 at rank 44. Cyborg was at 56,279 at rank 37.
That was actually, well, let me rephrase that. How did you feel about it?
There was an aspect of the story that did not sit well with me, but it was a decent read. I don't want to get too spoilery here.
No. I just, the sales number, is that where you expected? Is it higher than you
for
expected?
Cyborg?
Is it, yes. Is it lower than you expected?
It's higher than I expected.
Okay. I as actually much think it's a little lower than I expected.
As much as they want to treat him like an A-list character, he is not.
Fair enough.
He was crammed into the Justice League based on a little solid justification other than he was in the final series of final season of Super Friends. He is a Teen Titans character and works incredibly well there. He is the lesser run of the Justice League for the most part, second only to the replacement Green Lanterns they've currently got. He's the one that if you put the Justice League in front of most people, they're going to say, who's he? Versus knowing who Aquaman, Superman, Batman, etc. is. That having been said, could it sustain in the upper 40 to lower 50,000s? Yeah. Don't know that it will, but it could. I went through, and Drew and I talked about this a little on that weekly comic spotlight you'd listened to, and charted on an issue-to-issue basis how the new 52 runs and the Rebirth runs were going for DC.
Yep.
And in some cases, they were much stronger than the new 52 runs, in some cases not so much. The one I found the most interesting was Batman. The trend line was so similar, just to be hilarious. It's got sustainable sales because it's Batman and because it's proven it can sustain at those sales. But it's doing on par with how it had done before. Green Arrow's doing much better than it was. Aquaman, not so much. But again, it had Jeff Johns and a really good creative team at the start of the new 52 run.
Speaking of Batman, what do you think that says about, how do I want to put this, the creative team? How about I just say it that way and see what you respond with, and then I'll see if...
I think they're telling some really good stories mm-hmm. with Batman.
I agree.
I think the I Am Gotham stuff did well. I think Tom King did a good job there. That having been said, the Night of the Monster Men stuff didn't work incredibly well for me, and I'm not sure how well it worked for the majority of the readers. So instead of, I mean, are we going to see bumps in sales on those? I mean, we did on Nightwing by about almost 9%, but it's something that, again, I don't know how well most people like that story. For me, it felt out of place given the tone they had just set up with I Am Gotham.
Interesting. I'm trying to think how I want to...
What are you going for here?
I'm just... Here's the thing. The Batman line is virtually identical to where it was before that. You know, or where it was in the new 52. And we spent the better part of 5 years going, oh my goodness, why can't I think of his name? The guy doing All-Star Batman.
Scott Snyder.
Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo are just these geniuses, these comic geniuses that we have discovered.
Did I ever phrase it that way?
Not you, but I'd say that was kind of the overall mentality in the community.
That's fair. That's fair.
And I remember the time Greg was listed as one of the top artists in the world 10 years ago when he was doing, or 15 years ago when he was the main artist on Spawn all those years.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like we just forgotten him. How much of that at this point is these writers being that good or just competent enough to not be awful on the most popular book there is?
I think not being awful on a book is always something to strive for. And I say that sort of facetiously, but sort of not. I think it is easier to top the list with Batman than probably any other DC character. And if you go back far enough to when Grant Morrison first did Animal Man, that's a character that doing a really, wow, that's an amazing story, Animal Man. At the time, he was literally a member of the Forgotten Heroes. He was a joke, yet he took him and put him on the map. To me, that is a brilliant writer. He took a 4-issue miniseries and spun out, they continued for 70, 80 issues. 4-issue miniseries, 80 issues later. And granted, he wasn't on it the whole time, etc. He was only on for about 2-3 years. Anyways, if you've got a decent take on Batman, and you've got a good artist, you can do well with Batman. The character has a strength and a marketability that's robust. That having been said, you put a really good creative team on there, particularly after just an average one or whatever, and you can shoot the sales through the roof. Witness the Hush storyline and a few things like that. You get Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee on it. Wow. To me, I think Snyder had always done a really good job. I think Tom King is continuing in that vein. It's not a matter of the title needing an unbelievably genius writer to make it sell. It's one that, again, if you're doing a really solid story, whether it's genius or not, it's Batman. It'll do well. And I'm not trying to downplay the amazing run Scott Snyder had during the entire New 52 run of the book, where it never went under 100,000. To me, that's not just not screwing up. That's telling a really good story month in, month out. It stayed over 100,000 even when Batman wasn't in the book for that villain month. So some of that is, again, sales inertia.
Yeah, but Scott, to be fair, Scott Snyder didn't write all the books during that month either.
True. But I think he had built up enough goodwill to coast it through 1 month of 4 one-shots. If those had been on a monthly basis, yeah, probably not so much.
I don't know. It's just one of those things where, and obviously it in some ways can build careers. It's not that I'm thinking Tom King's doing a bad job or anything, but it's, there is a point where it's, you know, and hey, to be fair, myself, I've always said one of my all-time favorite writers is Chuck Dixon. Why? Because he wrote all the Bat Family books when I was the biggest Batman fan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just sometimes I wonder, as much as people go on and on about creators, how much of it's really the creators and how much of it isn't, you know, the Grant Morrison Animal Man example, that you got to give credit to the creator.
I think it's a mix of the creator, the character, the editorial guidance, and that could be take the form of strong editorial hands-on to get the coaching that the team needs or whatever, or it could be a very hands-off approach if that's what's appropriate. But it really comes down to, does that creative team have the right take on that character at that time for the then-current audience?
Yeah.
And it's a certain amount of striking, you know, lightning in a bottle, catching lightning in a bottle kind of a thing. And there's an aspect of certain books, you can be an otherwise arguably B-list creator, but doing your still very competent, very good work on a Batman, on a top-tier profile book, elevates you to that A-level just by nature. And it's not that the writer had any shortcoming, it's just the combination of that on a top-selling, a previously top-selling book as long as, again, they don't screw it up, that always being a major factor, can be enough to elevate someone's career. I mean, Tom King has done some really good stuff. Again, Vision, great. But he was also the guy behind Convergence, wasn't he?
No.
I would argue, no. Who am I thinking was Convergence then?
Wasn't Convergence some TV writer?
I thought Tom King was that TV writer. I'm confusing him with some other Tom, aren't I? I'd have to go look it up, and I'm not going to do that right now.
I'm attempting to do that as we speak.
Bottom line, you can pick any really great writer, and you can almost always find one book that they did that, oh, wow, that was a tragedy, travesty, horrible. And again, not pointing anything.
That was Jeff King.
Jeff King. Okay. Right last name, wrong person. Sorry to incorrectly attribute that. Thank you for correcting.
Yeah, co-executive producer from SG-1. Wrote for Deep Space Nine, things like that.
Huh. Having watched all of SG-1, that's not a name that really rings a bell with me.
And probably best known as the creator of a show called Due South.
Which was a good show. I didn't watch all of it, but the few things I've caught, I enjoyed.
Yeah.
Bottom line, there are certain books you can get on that will raise your career. I think these days those are fewer and further between. I would say right now, Batman, and I'm having a hard time naming any other.
Yeah.
Because Star Wars, maybe. But that, I think, is as much, do you have the right story with the right artist? To me, it's anyone who says, oh, I follow creators and stuff. You know, you can look at times at the top of the list and see the same creator that's got a book buried at the bottom.
And we've talked about this for, yes, we've talked a lot about that. Oh, duh, Jeff King did the first season of Continuum as well.
That was well done. But I'm not surprised you because I think the book was, or the series was not as good.
Literally, the first
that
10
series
episodes.
Was not as good afterwards. Again, there's a certain amount. Do you have the writing chops or not? And certain books, you get if you've got a mismatch between the creator and the property, which I feel falls on the editor having picked them for that property. It doesn't do anybody any good. But sometimes it's not even the quality of the writer, but the direction they choose to go in. That's one where I think with Cyborg they may have made a misstep. With one of the key questions they raise in that series was not one that I felt they should have gone with. You know, it's if it was easy to predict what was going to sell, everything would be selling better. That's really what it comes down to. Do we have anything that looks utterly amazing in terms of how it shot up, Shutta?
We've talked in such broad strokes. I can't. Leaving the list alone this month.
Put a number of items on it. What we haven't done, we'll do real quick just so people don't feel that we've skipped over it. The breakdown. DC did indeed have the lion's share of the units, 48.32%, with 3,641,285 units. Marvel was in second place with 32.32% of the units, with 2,435,588 units. Image in third place with 7.41% of the units. That's 558,039 units, followed by IDW, then Dark Horse. So if you total up the front half of the premier publishers, the front half of previews, that's 93% of the total unit sale for the top 300. Obviously, they crowd out a lot of stuff, push it down further on the list, yada, yada.
Well, and once you take Boom, Titan, and Valiant out, you're at 96.6%.
You know, it was funny because as I was playing around with some charting stuff of, you know, wanting to kind of stack these up to get that stacked bar chart to the about 7.5 million. It's like, well, which publishers are worth pulling out? Obviously DC, Marvel, the premier ones. And then the next two that came to mind were Boom and Dynamite. And then I realized Dynamite didn't even have 0.5% this time.
Well, and we talked about this 3, 4, 6 months, 8 months ago. Dynamite has really fallen off in the last year or so.
They made an intentional decision to cut back on the number of titles they were doing. And that may have helped them focus a little more strategically, whatever, but it wasn't putting units on the board, which in and of itself is not a bad thing. It's not a great thing, obviously. You need to sell units to make money. But if they just needed a little time to kind of regroup and come back with a better game plan, and that shows up moving forward, that's cool. But they are not...
They have six items on the list. And I would assume, looking, four of them for certain are licensed properties, possibly all six of them. Bob's Burgers, Xena Warrior Princess, Lone Ranger Green Hornet, and Battlestar Galactica are clearly licensed titles. Boo World's Cutest Dog and Shadow the Death of Margo Lane, I just don't know.
I would love if somebody could help me figure out how to, from the solicitation information, accurately determine if a title is a licensed property or not. Because I would love to group the sales also by, well, how much of this publisher is licensed versus not. But, I mean, a ton of stuff over at IDW is licensed. So, it's not necessarily a bad thing. I guess, to me, Dynamite has gone from that minor league publisher that was in that middle group with Archie, Boom, Dark Horse, IDW, Image, and stuff like that, and really has fallen out of that at this point.
But Dynamite, as we talked about, six items. IDW may all be licensed too, but 25 items.
And again, they've...
And 200, you know, almost a quarter million units compared to 31,000 units.
IDW is firmly in the premier publisher camp. There's no two ways about it. It's solidly in fourth position.
It's really replaced Dark Horse in many ways.
It would not take much for Dark Horse to kind of fall below, say, Boom or something like that. If Boom were to get, say, a solid licensed property or some other thing to invigorate, you know, their sales. Or flip side, it wouldn't be out of the question for Titan to do that. I'd be hard pressed to name what I would suggest, how I would suggest Titan go about doing it. But, you know, if Boom could leverage the Power Ranger franchise the way Titan has leveraged the Doctor Who franchise, that would be enough sales potentially for Boom to overtake Dark Horse.
I do have a question for you, because this is interesting. Filter your list to Dynamite, or to IDW. Never mind. My question went away when I reorganized my list. Never mind. I had My Little Pony lower on the list than other books that it sold more than, but I didn't have the quantity rank sorted correctly.
I always leave mine sorted by quantity rank just for simplicity.
I usually do too, but I had gone by Delta to see if there's anything that had made an improvement that I wanted to note, and the answer was no.
Sure. Again, I think a lot of the sales that were there the last couple of months that were not there this time, some just crazy unsustainable sales last month. You know, again, the Harley Quinn that we saw evaporate within the month, that was part of it. Just by looking at some basic statistics of the list from month to month, you know, what the top item was, what the median was, some stuff like that, you could tell that a certain amount of sales were just flat out lost. You know, when the top item is down, you know, substantially, it's like, well, that's units flat out just didn't happen. When the floor drops by, I'm trying to think how much it dropped by, a noticeable amount. I mean, the median dropped by 2,400 units. That means 2,400 times the top half, you know, 150 items in the top half of the list just didn't happen, you know. So you can do some basic, just rough math and realize that, you know, that bottom half of the list, not as strong as it was last month, you know, things of that sort. Top of the list just wasn't where it was. Which is part of why one of the breakdowns of the sales I'm working on is by rank groupings. And it's essentially, okay, the bottom half of the list is one block, followed by the next quarter of the list and just kind of almost by half each time into eight blocks, because it winds up being fairly, I don't say symmetrical or whatever, but nice visible chunks. It really shows that when you've got that one outlier of, say, that Star Wars number one, when that top item is doing substantially more than the second and third place item combined, oh, well, you've got a highly anomalous first place item, you know? And sometimes you see a strength at the bottom of the list. Sometimes you see a strength up in the higher quadrants. And I expect to see stronger sales at the top, not just because, well, the higher items, selling items are there, but that's where those new influx of new titles are coming in that have the robust sales as they dwindle down over time and exit the list later.
I will say this just because it's impressive. DC Universe Rebirth is still on the list at rank 211 with more reorder, which is just unbelievable that that issue's still selling.
I think there was... That's where they're starting kind of the new Rebirth meta arc, and they have touched yep. on it in an issue of Detective Comics, a little bit over in Flash, teased it in the latest issue actually touched on it over in Titans, teased it in a little bit of the Flash. There might have been one other place that moved it forward, but it's moving at a snail's pace, and I think they need to pick up the pace a little on that. Not tons, not accelerate it, but it just seems to be, well, that was a page here. I wonder if we'll ever see this character, where we'll see this character again. As a long-term reader who's interested in the big picture arc, having to go chase it down by reading everything's a little unrealistic. And that's me saying that.
Yeah.
Let's see, a few other things real quick. Let's see, Doom Patrol, 76,224 units. It's pretty good. Curious to see how that does moving forward. Josie and the Pussycats, number one, 28,769 down at rank 86. Let's see, we talked about all the Marvel stuff. Astro City, this is again one that wasn't on the list last time, but showed up twice this time. And what was really annoying is even between those two issues, it's still put under 20,000 units on the board. It is such a good series.
Yeah.
Just flabbergasted it's not doing better. And it's not for everybody, I get that, but it is one of the best written superhero books out there, and more people should read it. Very few... Or go ahead.
I was going to say, Exo Man of War got to issue 50. Had a nice, almost doubled its sales for a $4.99 mm-hmm. book up to 15,000.
It was a good read, end cap for the series. That was yeah. the title that launched the current Valiant, and again, they're kind of doing that title rotation. I am sure we will come back to that character at some point, but it may be a year or two easily down the line.
Also a number one out of Valiant that did very well this month in Britannia, their top-selling book at 19,910, rank 115.
It will not be selling that way with number five, because there will be no number five in this four-issue series.
Okay, well, still strong
yeah, no, it's something good. They do good stuff over at Valiant. It's one of those publishers that I just don't think has gotten quite the market penetration and awareness that it sometimes deserves.
I still think the beginning to relaunch initiative hurt them. I know it's where I dropped out, and it, again, anecdotally seems where I began hearing much yeah, less about them.
I think the rotation of titles could have been handled better in terms of how often they did it, how they did it, and certainly how they communicated it, because for yeah. me, it just seems like it's, I was just getting used to this book, and now it's gone.
In the variant series, debacle,
no,
I don't think
helped
either.
A lot of goodwill. I don't think an irrecoverable amount, but one of the books Drew and I reviewed this week was Generation Zero, which is characters that spun mm-hmm. out of the Harbinger Wars, which was back at the beginning of Valiant this time around, so a couple of years back. And it was yep. it's a good series, but it's almost 3.5 years late in terms of when it should have been timed. It's perfectly on time. They had not announced it earlier, etc., or at least not solicited it. But this is one where enough time elapses between when it makes sense to do a book and when the book actually kind of comes out sometimes that it's a little frustrating. Yeah. But if they do it well when they do it, I'm good with that. Number of price points this time around, very few. Over two-thirds of the list were at $3.99. About a quarter of the list was at $2.99. A couple of things scattered about, but just very kind of surprising how much of it really just focused on those two, with $4.99 being the other major price point, and I think they're being pushed back on that price point.
Yeah.
So, like we said, most of the books are 12 issues or under for the issue number. There was a net loss, of course, from month to month of $1.8 million. on an issue-to-issue basis, that's closer to the million mark. Because, again, not every title ships every month, etc. If we do a rough breakdown, again, the math on this is still in flux. So these are our ballpark numbers. Around 5.8 million of the units for this month were continuing titles. A little over a million was new titles. About 175,000-176,000 was annuals, specials, things like that. And about 393,000-394,000 were things returning to the list after having not been there last month. And about 36,000 were reorder activity. And what that means is we had an increase of that million or so for the new titles, because, well, hey, they're new. But we also had decreases on the continuing titles of about 1.6 million and over 1.5 million units that were suspended that showed up last month and didn't show up this month. Some of those will never show up again because the title ended. Some of those just didn't ship that in September.
But I will say this. I'm actually a little surprised that continuing and returning makes up 82% of the list, which I think is healthy. There's months I would have assumed that number was much smaller.
And I think most months it would have been. There was a low amount of new sales. This is actually the lowest it's been since March for new titles. Mm-hmm. And there may be a seasonality to that. I mean, you don't want to launch a bunch of stuff in like January or February. Those are just typically weak months. So that's part of why I want to be trying to look at the numbers through this sort of a lens. And if listeners have thoughts and suggestions on this, either how I can pillage the data to get this a little bit more fine grain or whatever, please post on the forum, email me. I want to kind of expand the sort of analysis I do on this stuff. And this is one that this month, it's just been kind of fun to play with. So anything else? Or does that pretty much do it?
Cool. I think I'm good.
All right, I am stopping Audacity. As soon as I figure out where the hell my cursor is, I am stopping it.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes two decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, lists of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or excuse 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and/or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.